and exactly not how Kath had imagined it. Kath had pictured bare walls and the sort of furniture that sat out on curbs for a week before anybody decided to take it. But Levi's house was actually nice. Simple, but nice. There were a few paintings hanging on the walls and houseplants everywhere, ferns and spider plants, and a jade tree so big it looked like an actual tree. There was music playing, sleepy electronic music, but not too loud, and somebody was burning incense. There were plenty of people still there, all older than Kath, at least as old as Levi, and they were mostly just talking. Two guys standing next to the stereo were sort of dancing, sort of just being silly, and they didn't seem to care that they were the only ones. Kath stood as close as she could to Reagan's back and tried not to be obvious about looking for Levi. Inside her head, Kath was standing on tiptoe with her hand over her eyes, scanning the horizon for ships. Everybody there knew Reagan. Somebody handed them each a beer, and Kath took hers but didn't open it. It was Levi's roommate, one of them. Almost everybody Kath met in the next few minutes was one of Levi's roommates. She looked right through them. Maybe Levi was in the bathroom. Maybe he'd already gone to bed. Maybe Kath could climb into his bed like Goldilocks, and if he woke up, she'd just say, "Later," and run away. Goldilocks plus Cinderella. Reagan had finished half a beer before she asked somebody, "Where's Levi?" The person, a guy with a beard and black Ray-Ban frames, looked around the living room. "Kitchen, maybe?" Reagan nodded like she didn't care, because she doesn't, really, Kath thought. "Come on," she said to Kath. "Let's go find him." And then, when they'd walked away from everyone else, "Be cool." The house had three big front rooms that were all connected, living room, dining room, and sunroom, and the kitchen was in the back, through a narrow doorway. Kath stuck close behind Reagan, so Reagan saw Levi before Kath was even through the door. "Shit," Kath heard her whisper. Kath stepped into the kitchen. Levi was leaning back against the sink. Levi, always leaning. He had a bottle of beer in one hand, the same hand he was pressing into a girl's back. The girl looked older than Kath, even with her eyes closed. Levi's other hand was tangled in her long blonde hair, and he was kissing her with his mouth smiling and open. He made it look so easy. Kath looked down immediately and walked out of the kitchen, walked straight through the house to the front door. She knew Reagan was right behind her because she could hear her muttering, "Shit, shit, shit."
"But I don't understand," Simon stammered. "What is the insidious humdrum? Is he a man?"
"Perhaps." The mage wiped the grit from his eyes and swept his wand out in front of them. "Olly, olly, oxen free," he whispered. Simon braced himself, but nothing happened. "Perhaps he's a man," the mage said, recovering his wry smile. "Perhaps he's something else. Something less, I should think."
"Is he a magician? Like us?"
"No," the mage said severely. "Of that we can be certain. He, if indeed he is a he, is the enemy of magic. He destroys magic. Some think he eats it. He wipes the world clean of magic, wherever he can. You're too young to hear this, Simon. 11 is too young. But it isn't fair to keep it from you any longer. The insidious humdrum is the greatest threat the world of mages has ever faced. He's powerful. He's pervasive. Fighting him is like fighting off sleep when you're long past the edge of exhaustion. But fight him we must. You were recruited to Watford because we believe the humdrum has taken a special interest in you. We want to protect you. I vow to do so with my life. But you must learn, Simon, as soon as possible, how best to protect yourself.
From Chapter 23, Simon Snow and the Mage's Heir. Copyright 2001 by Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 17. They didn't talk in the car, and Kath didn't cry. She was grateful for that. She already felt like such a fool. Because she was one. What had she been thinking? That Levi really liked her? How could she have believed that, especially after she'd spent the last 2 days explaining to herself all the reasons he never would? Maybe she'd thought it was possible because Reagan thought it was possible, and Reagan wasn't anybody's fool. When they got back to the dorms, Reagan stopped Kath from getting out of the car. "Wait." Kath sat, holding the passenger door open. "I'm sorry," Reagan said. "I really didn't expect that to happen." "I just want to pretend that it didn't," Kath said, feeling tears burning again in her eyes. "I don't want to talk about this. And I mean, I know he's your best friend, but I really don't want you to talk to him about tonight, or about me, ever. I already feel like such an ass." "Sure," Reagan said. "Whatever you want." "I want to pretend this didn't happen." "Okay." Reagan was good at not talking about things. She didn't mention Levi for the rest of the weekend. He called Kath Saturday morning, but she didn't pick up. A few seconds later, Reagan's phone rang. "Don't ignore him on my account," Kath said. "It never happened." "Hey," Reagan said into the phone. "Yeah, all right. Just call me when you're downstairs. Kath is trying to study." A half hour later, Reagan's phone rang again, and she got up to leave. "See ya," she said. Kath nodded. "Later." Levi tried calling Kath again that weekend, twice, and once he sent her a text that said, "So they found the fifth hair. Now what? We'll trade gingerbread lattes and pumpkin bread for this information." The fact that he misspelled pumpkin made Kath wince. If she hadn't gone to the party, if she hadn't seen Levi in action, she would have thought this text was him asking her out on a date. She knew she'd have to see him again. He was still Reagan's best friend. The two of them still studied together. Reagan would probably keep him away completely if Kath wanted that, but Kath didn't want Levi to ask questions, so Kath stayed away instead. She started going to the library after dinner and hanging out in Nick's stacks. Nick generally wasn't there. Nobody was. Kath brought her laptop and tried to work on her final project, her 10,000-word short story for fiction writing. She'd started it. She'd started it half a dozen times, but she still didn't have anything she wanted to finish. Usually, she ended up working on Carry On, Simon. Kath was on a streak, posting long chapters almost every night. Switching from her fiction writing homework to Simon and Baz was like realizing she'd been driving in the wrong gear. She could actually feel the muscles in her forearms loosen. Her typing got faster, her breathing got easier. She'd catch herself nodding her head as she wrote, almost like she was keeping time with the words as they rushed out of her. When the library closed, Kath would dial 911 on her phone, then run back to the dorm as fast as she could with her finger on call. It was more than a week before she saw Levi again. She came home from class late one afternoon, and he was sitting on Reagan's bed while Reagan typed. "Cather," he said, grinning, pulling his earphones out of his head. He was listening to a lecture. She knew that now. Reagan said he listened to them all the time, and that he even saved the ones he really liked. "Hey," he said, "I owe you a beverage. Your choice, hot or fermented. I rocked that outsider's quiz. Did Reagan tell you? I got an A." "That's great," Kath said, trying not to let her face show how much she wanted to kiss and kill him. She'd thought Reagan had to work tonight. That was the only reason Kath had come home. But she didn't have to stay here. She was going to meet Nick at the library later anyway. Kath pretended to get something she needed out of her desk, a pack of gum. "Okay," she said. "I'm taking off."
"But you just got here," Levi said. "Don't you want to stay and talk about the symbolism of Johnny's relationship with Ponyboy and the struggle between soda pop and dairy? Hey, do you think there's such a thing as outsiders fan fiction?"
"I've got to go," Kath said, trying to say it to Reagan. "Meeting somebody."
"Who are you meeting?" Levi asked.
"Nick, my writing partner."
"Oh, right. Do you want me to walk you home later?"
"Nick'll probably walk me home," she said.
"Oh."
Levi brought his eyebrows together, but still smiled.
"Cool. Later."
She couldn't get away from him fast enough. She got to the library and wrote 1,000 words of Carry On before Nick showed up.
"Shut that thing down," Nick said. "You're corrupting my creative centers with static."
"That's what she said," Kath said, closing her laptop. Nick looked dubious. "It was sort of a metaphysical, that's what she said."
"Ah."
He set down his backpack and pulled out their notebook.
"You working on your final project?"
"Indirectly," Kath said.
"What does that mean?"
"Have you ever heard sculptors say that they don't actually sculpt an object? They sculpt away everything that isn't the object?"
"No."
He sat down. "Well, I'm writing everything that isn't my final project, so that when I actually sit down to write it, that's all that will be left in my mind."
"Clever girl," he said, pushing the open notebook toward her.
She flipped through it. Nick had filled 5 pages, front and back, since they'd last met. "What about you?" she asked.
"I don't know," he said. "I might turn in a story I worked on this summer."
"Isn't that cheating?"
"I don't think so. It's more like being really ahead of schedule. All I can think about right now is this story."
He nudged the notebook toward Kath again.
"I want you to read what I did."
This story. Their story. Nick kept trying to call it an anti-love story.
"But it's not anti-love," she'd argued. "It's anti-everything you usually find in a love story. Gooey eyes and you complete me."
"You complete me is a great line," Kath said. "You wish you came up with 'you complete me.'" Kath didn't tell him that she'd been writing love stories, rewriting the same love story every day for the past 5 years, that she'd written love stories with and without the goo, love-at-first-sight stories, love-before-first-sight stories, love-to-hate-you stories. She didn't tell Nick that writing love stories was her thing, her one true thing, and that his anti-love story read like somebody's very first fanfic, Mary Sue to the 10th power. That the main character was obviously Nick, and that the girl was obviously Winona Ryder plus Natalie Portman plus Selena Gomez. Instead, Kath fixed it. She rewrote his dialogue. She reined in the quirk.
"Why'd you cross that out?"
Nick said to Knight, leaning over her left shoulder. He smelled good. "Breaking news. Boys smell good."
"I liked that part," he said.
"Our character just stopped her car in a parking lot to wish on a dandelion."
"It's refreshing," Nick said. "It's romantic."
Kath shook her head. Her ponytail brushed Nick's neck. "It makes her seem like a douche."
"You have something against dandelions?"
"I have something against 22-year-old women wishing on dandelions. Stopping the car to wish on dandelions. Also, the car, no. No to vintage Volvos."
"It's a character detail."
"It's a cliché. I swear to God, every surviving Volvo produced between 1970 and 1985 is being driven by quirky fictional girls." Nick pouted down at the paper.
"You're crossing out everything."
"I'm not crossing out everything."
"What are you leaving?"
He leaned over more and watched her write.
"The rhythm," Kath said.
The rhythm is good.
Yeah?
He smiled.
Yeah, it reads like a waltz.
Make you jealous?
He smiled some more. His eye teeth were crooked, but not bad enough to get braces.
Definitely, Kath said. I could never write a waltz.
Sometimes when they talked like this, she was sure they were flirting. But when the notebook closed, the light always went off in Nick's eyes. At midnight, he'd rush off to wherever he always rushed off to, probably to wrap a beer around a blonde girl's waist, to kiss her with his twisted eye teeth showing. Kath kept working on the scene. A whole new conversation took shape in the margin. When she looked up, Nick was still smiling at her.
What? She asked.
Nothing, he said, laughing.
What?
Nothing. Just, it's crazy that this works, between you and me, that we can actually write together. It's like thinking together.
It's nice, Kath said, meaning it. Writing is lonely.
You wouldn't think we'd be on the same wavelength, you know? We're so different.
We're not that different.
Totally different, he said. Look at us.
We're both English majors, Kath said. We're both white. We live in Nebraska. We listen to the same music. We watch the same TV shows. We even have the same pair of Chuck Taylors.
Yeah, but it's like John Lennon writing with Taylor Swift instead of Paul McCartney.
Get over yourself, Kath said. You're not half as pretty as Taylor Swift.
You know what I mean.
Nick poked her in the arm with the end of his pen. It's nice, she said, looking up at him, still not sure if they were flirting, pretty sure she didn't want them to be. Writing is lonely. There wasn't time for Kath to write a page of her own in the notebook. She and Nick spent the rest of their night in the stacks, revamping his section. The Volvo became a rusty neon, and the dandelion detail blew away completely. At 11:45, they packed up. When they got to the library's front steps, Nick was already checking his phone.
Hey, Kath said, do you feel like walking past Pound Hall on your way to your car? We could walk together.
He didn't look up from his phone.
Better not. I need to get home. See you in class, though.
Yeah, Kath said. See ya.
She got out her phone and started dialing 911 before he disappeared into the shadows.
Dad, it's Kath. I was just calling to say hi. I was thinking about coming home this weekend. Give me a call.
Dad, I'm calling you at work now. It's Thursday. I think I'm going to come home tomorrow. Call me back, okay? Or email me. Love you.
Hey, honey, it's your dad. Don't come home this weekend. I'm going to be gone all weekend at the Gravioli shoot in Tulsa. I mean, come home if you want to. Throw a big party, like Tom Cruise in... God, what is that movie? Not Top Gun. Risky Business. Have a big party. Invite a bunch of people over to watch Risky Business. I don't have any booze, but there's still some green bean casserole left. I love you, Kath. Are you still fighting with your sister? Don't.
Love Library was busier than normal that weekend. It was the week before finals, and everybody seemed to be digging in. Kath had to roam deeper and deeper into the library to find an empty study, Carol. You visited. Tonight, she walked by a half-sized door in a stairwell. The sign said, South Stacks, and Kath would swear she'd never seen it before. She opened the door, and there was an immediate step down into a normal-sized hallway. Kath ended up in another silo-ish room, the mirror image of Nick's. The wind was even blowing in the opposite direction. She found an empty cubicle and set down her bag, taking off her coat. A girl sitting on the other side of the gray partition was watching her. The girl sat up a little so that Kath could see she was smiling. She looked quickly around the room, then leaned forward, holding on to the cubicle wall.
"I don't mean to bother you, but I love your shirt."
Kath glanced down. She was wearing her Keep Calm and Carry On shirt from Etsy, the one with Baz and Simon's faces.
Oh, Kath said. Thanks. It's always so cool to meet somebody else who reads fan fiction in real life.
Kath must have looked surprised.
Oh my God, the girl said. Do you even know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Kath said. Of course. I mean, I think so. Carry on, Simon.
Yes!
The girl laughed quietly and looked around the room again.
That was almost embarrassing. I mean, it's like having a secret life sometimes. People think it's so weird.
Fan fiction. Slash, you know. Kath nodded. Do you read a lot of fic?
Not as much anymore, the girl said. I was an addict in high school.
Her blonde hair was pulled back in a ponytail, and she was wearing a sweatshirt that read, Verdigris Football, Fight Hawks Fight. She didn't look like a creepy shut-in.
What about you? She asked.
I still read a lot, Kath said.
Magic Kath is my absolute favorite, the girl interrupted, like she couldn't hold it back. I'm obsessed with Carry On. Have you been keeping up?
Yeah.
She's been posting so much lately. Every time there's a new chapter, I have to stop everything to read it, and then read it again. My roommate thinks I'm crazy.
Mine too.
But it's just so good. Nobody writes Simon and Baz like Magic Kath. I'm in love with her, Baz, like in love. And I used to be a major Simon/Agatha shipper.
Kath wrinkled her nose.
No, I know, I was young.
If Agatha actually cared about either of them, Kath said, she'd pick one.
I know, right? When Simon broke it off with her and Carry On, such a good scene.
You didn't think it was too long?
No, the girl said. Did you?
I wasn't sure.
I never think the chapters are too long. I just want more and more and more.
The girl waved her hands in front of her mouth like she was Cookie Monster eating cookies.
I'm telling you, I'm obsessed with Carry On. I feel like something big is about to happen soon.
Me too, Kath said. I think the mage might turn on Simon.
No, you think?
I've just got a feeling about it.
It killed me how long it took Simon and Baz to get together, and now I'm dying for them to have a big love scene. That's my only complaint about Carry On, not enough Simon/Baz action.
She almost never writes love scenes, Kath said, feeling her cheeks pink.
Yeah, but when she does, they're hot.
You think? The girl laughed.
Yes!
This is why people think we're crazy perverts, Kath said. The girl just giggled some more.
I know. Sometimes I forget that there's still a real book coming out. Like it's hard for me to imagine that the story is going to end any other way than the way Magic Kath writes it.
Sometimes, Kath said, when I'm reading canon, I forget that Simon and Baz aren't in love.
Right? I love Gemma T. Leslie. I always will. I feel like she was this major force in my childhood. And I know that Magic Kath wouldn't exist without GTL. But now, I think I love Magic Kath more. Like, she might be my favorite author. And she's never even written a book.
Kath's jaw was hanging slightly open, and she was shaking her head.
That's crazy. I know, the girl said. But I think it's true. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm talking your ear off. I just never get to talk about this stuff in real life. Except to my boyfriend. He knows what a freak I am about it.
Don't apologize, Kath said. This was cool. The girl sat down, and so did Kath. She opened up her laptop and thought for a minute about Professor Piper, then opened up the latest chapter of Carry On. Something big was about to happen soon.
Dad, it's Kath. Are you back from Tulsa?
Just checking in. Call me.
Dad, it's Kath. Call me.
Hey, Kath, it's your dad. I'm back. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Worry about school. No, scratch that. Don't worry at all. Try not worrying, Kath. It's an amazing way to be. Like flying. Love you, honey. Tell your sister hi.
Dad? I know you don't want me to worry, but I would worry less if you called me back, and not at 3 a.m.
10 days, Professor Piper said. Instead of sitting in her usual spot on her desk, she was striking a pose at the windows. It was snowing outside. It had already snowed so much this year, and it was only early December, and the professor cut a dramatic figure against the icy glass.
"I'd like to believe that you're all finished with your short stories," she said, turning her blue eyes on them. "That you're just tweaking and tinkering now, tugging every last loose thread."
She walked back toward their desks and smiled at a few of them, one by one. Kath felt a thrill when their eyes met.
"But I'm a writer, too," the professor said. "I know what it's like to be distracted, to seek out distractions, to exhaust yourself doing every other little thing rather than face a blank page." She smiled at one of the boys. "A blank screen. So, if you haven't finished, or if you haven't started, I understand, I do. But I implore you, start now. Lock yourself away from the world, turn off the internet, barricade the door. Write as if your life depended on it. Write as if your future depended on it. Because I can promise you this one small thing."
She let her eyes rest on another one of her favorites and smiled.
"If you're planning to take my advanced course next semester, you won't get in unless you get a B in this class. And this short story is half your final grade. This class is for writers," she said. "For people who are willing to set aside their fears and move past distractions. I love you all. I do. But if you're going to waste your time, I'm not going to waste mine."
She stopped at Nick's desk and smiled at him.
"Okay?" she said, only to him.
Nick nodded. Kath looked down at her desk. She hadn't washed her sheets, but there wasn't any Levi left in them. Kath pushed her face into her pillow as nonchalantly as she could, even though there was no one else in the room to judge her for it. Her pillowcase smelled like a dirty pillowcase, and a little bit like Tostitos. Kath closed her eyes and imagined Levi lying next to her, his legs touching and crossing hers. She remembered the way her throat had rasped that night, and the way he'd put his arm around her, like he wanted to hold her up, like he wanted to make everything easy for her. She remembered his flannel shirt and his needy pink mouth, and how she hadn't spent nearly enough time with her fingers in the back of his hair. And then she was crying, and her nose was running. She wiped it on her pillow because, at this point, what did it matter?
Simon ran as fast as he could. Faster. Casting spells on his feet and legs. Casting spells on the branches and stones in his path. He could already be too late. At first he thought he was, when he saw Agatha lying in a heap on the forest floor. But it was a trembling heap. Agatha may be frightened, but she was still whole. Baz was kneeling over her, and trembling just as hard. His hair hung forward in a way he normally wouldn't allow, and his pale skin glowed oddly in the moonlight, like the inside of a shell. Simon wondered for a moment why Agatha wasn't trying to escape. She must be dazed, he thought. Vampires could do that, couldn't they?
"Go away," Baz hissed.
"Baz," Simon said, holding his hand out.
"Don't look at me."
Simon avoided Baz's eyes, but he didn't look away. "I'm not afraid of you," Simon said.
"You should be. I could kill you both. Her first, then you, before you'd even realized I was doing it. I'm so fast, Simon."
His voice broke on the last two words.
"I know."
"And so strong."
"I know."
"And so thirsty."
Simon's voice was almost a whisper.
"I know."
Baz's shoulders shook. Agatha started to sit up. She must be recovering. Simon looked at her gravely and shook his head. He took another step toward them. He was close now,
in Baz's reach.
I'm not afraid of you, Baz.
Why not?
Baz whined. It was an animal whine. Wounded.
Because I know you. And I know you wouldn't hurt me.
Simon held out his hand and gently pushed back the errant lock of black hair.
Baz's head tilted up with a touch, his fangs popped and gleaming.
You're so strong, Baz.
Baz reached for him then, clutching Simon around the waist and pressing his face into his stomach. Agatha slid out from between them and ran toward the fortress. Simon held Baz by the back of his neck and curved his body over him.
I know,
Simon said.
I know everything.
From Carry On, Simon, posted February 2011, by fanfics.net author Magicath.
Chapter 18.
Do you just hang out here now? Nick pushed his library cart to her table.
Just trying to write, Kath said, closing her laptop before he started peeking at her screen.
Working on your final project?
He slipped into the chair beside her and tried to open the computer. She laid her arm on top of it.
Have you settled on a direction yet?
He asked. Yep, Kath said. Lots of them. He frowned for a second, then shook his head.
I'm not worried about you. You can write 10,000 words in your sleep.
She practically could. She'd written 10,000 words of Carry On in one night before. Her wrists had really hurt the next day. What about you? She asked. Done?
Almost. Well, I have an idea.
He smiled at her. It was one of those smiles that made her think he might be flirting. Smiling is confusing, she thought. This is why I don't do it.
I think I'm going to turn in my anti-love story.
He raised his Muppet eyebrows and stretched his top lip across his teeth. Kath felt her mouth hanging open and closed it. The story? Like, the story we've been working on?
Yeah,
Nick said excitedly, raising his eyebrows high again.
I mean, at first I thought it was too frivolous. A short story is supposed to be about something. But it's like you always say, it's about two people falling in love. What could be bigger than that? And we've workshopped it enough. I think it's ready.
He pushed his elbow into hers and tapped his front teeth with the tip of his tongue. He was watching her eyes.
So what do you think? It's a good idea, right?
Kath snapped her mouth shut again. It's just that... She looked down at the table where the notebook usually sat. We worked on it together.
Kath,
he said, like he was disappointed in her.
What are you trying to say?
Well, you're calling it your story.
You call it that,
he said, cutting her off.
You're always saying that you feel more like an editor than a co-writer.
I was teasing you.
Are you teasing me now? I can't tell.
She glanced up at his face. He looked impatient. And let down, like Kath was letting him down.
Can we just be honest?
He asked. He didn't wait for her to answer.
This story was my idea. I started it. I'm the only one who works on it outside the library. I appreciate all of your help. You're a genius editor, and you've got tons of potential. But do you really think it's your story?
No, Kath said. Of course not. She felt her voice shrink into a whine. But we were writing together, like Lennon-McCartney.
John Lennon and Paul McCartney have been quoted multiple times saying they wrote their songs separately, then showed them to each other. Do you really think John Lennon wrote half of Yesterday? Do you think Paul McCartney wrote Revolution? Don't be naive.
Kath clenched her fists in her lap.
Look,
Nick said, smiling like he was forcing himself to do it.
I really appreciate everything you've done. You really get me, as an artist, like nobody else ever has. You're my best sounding board, and I want us to keep showing each other our stuff. I don't want to feel like, if I offer you a suggestion, it belongs to me, or vice versa.
She shook her head. That's not...
She didn't know what to say, so she pulled her laptop toward her and started wrapping the cord around it, the one Abel had given her. It really was a good gift.
Kath, don't. You're freaking me out here. Are you actually mad about this? Do you really think I'm stealing from you?
She shook her head again and put her computer in her bag.
Are you angry?
He asked. No, she whispered. They were still in a library, after all. I'm just... just...
I thought you'd be happy for me, he said. You're the only one who knows how hard I've worked on this. You know how I've poured myself into this story.
I know, she said. That part was true. Nick had cared about the story. Kath hadn't. She cared about the writing, about the magic third thing that lived between them when they were working together. She would have met Nick at the library to write obituaries or shampoo packaging. I'm just, she said, I need to work on my story now. It's almost finals week.
Can't you work here?
I don't want to waterboard you with my typing noises, she murmured.
Do you want to get together one more time before we turn in our stories, just to proof them?
Sure, she said, not meaning it. Kath waited until she got to the stairs to start running and ran all the way home by herself through the trees and the darkness. On Wednesday afternoon, after her biology final, Kath sat in front of her computer. She wasn't going to leave the room or get on the internet until she finished her fiction writing project. She wasn't going to stop typing until she had a first draft, even if that meant typing things like, I don't know what the fuck I'm typing right now, blah, blah, blah. She still hadn't settled on a plot or characters. She spent an hour writing a conversation between a man and his wife, and then she realized there was no rising or falling action. The man and his wife were just arguing about Brussels sprouts, and the Brussels sprouts weren't a metaphor for anything deeper. Then she started a story about a couple's breakup from the perspective of their dog. And then she started a story where a dog intentionally destroys a marriage. And then she stopped, because she wasn't all that interested in dogs. Or married people. She thought about typing up everything she remembered writing from Nick's anti-love story. That would get Professor Piper's attention. She thought about taking one of her Simon/Baz stories and just changing the names. She probably could have gotten away with that if Professor Piper wasn't already on to her. Maybe she could take a Simon/Baz story and change all the material details. Simon is a lawyer, and Baz is a spy. Simon is a cop, and Baz owns a bakery. Simon likes Brussels sprouts, and Baz is a dog. Kath wanted desperately to escape to the internet, just to check her email or something, but she wouldn't let herself open a browser window, not even to check whether the B in Brussels should be capitalized. Instead, she shoved away from her desk and went to the bathroom. She walked slowly down the hall, trolling for distractions, but there was no one milling around, trying to be friendly. Kath went back to her room and lay on her bed. She'd stayed up too late the night before studying for biology, and it was easy to close her eyes. It was almost a nice change of pace to be stewing about Nick instead of Levi. Had she actually liked him? Nick, that is. She definitely liked Levi. Or had she just liked everything he represented? Smart, talented, handsome. World War I handsome. Now, just thinking about Nick made her feel so ashamed. She'd been taken, grifted. Had he planned to steal the story all along, or was he just desperate, like Kath was desperate? Nick and his stupid story. It really was his story. It was nothing Kath ever would have written on her own. Stupid, quirky girl character. Stupid, pretentious boy character. No dragons. It was Nick's story. He'd just tricked her into writing it. He was an unreliable narrator if ever she'd met one. Kath wanted to work on her own story now, not the one for class. Carry On. Carry On was Kath's story. Thousands of people were reading it. Thousands of people wanted her to finish. This story she was supposed to be writing for class, only one person cared if she finished it, and that one person wasn't even Kath. She fell asleep with her shoes on, lying on her stomach. When she woke up, it was dark, and she hated that. It was disorienting to fall asleep in the light and wake up in the dark instead of the other way around. Her head ached, and there was a circle of drool on her pillow. That only happened when she slept during the day. Kath sat up miserably and realized her phone was ringing. She didn't recognize the number. Hello?
Cather?
It was a man's voice, gentle. Yes? Who is this?
Hey, Cather, it's Kelly. Kelly from your dad's work.
Kelly was her dad's creative director, the panda bear guy. Fucking Kelly, her dad called him, as in, fucking Kelly is making us start over on the Kilpatrick's campaign, or, and then fucking Kelly got it in his head that the robot should be dancing. Kelly was the reason her dad still had a job. Every time Kelly switched agencies, he talked Kath's dad into following him. Kelly chalked up all her dad's extreme behavior to the creative mind. Your dad's a genius, he told the twins at one Christmas party. His brain was specifically designed to make ads. He's a precision instrument. Kelly had a soft, wheedling voice, like he was trying to talk you into something or sell you something every time he opened his mouth. Have you girls tried the cocktail shrimp here? The cocktail shrimp are amazing. Hearing Kelly's soft sell voice now sent an unpleasant chill scrabbling up Kath's spine. Hi, she said.
Hey, Cather, I'm sorry to call you at school. It's finals week, right? My Connor tells me it's finals week.
Yeah, she said.
Look, I got your number from your dad's phone, and I just wanted to tell you that he's perfectly okay. He's going to be fine. But he's spending tonight, maybe the next day or two, here at the hospital. Here at St. Richard's Hospital.
What happened?
Nothing happened. He's okay. I mean it. He just needs to get his balance back.
Why? I mean, what happened? Why did you take him there? Did you take him there?
Yeah, I did. I brought him here myself. It wasn't that anything happened. It's just that he was really caught up in work, which, you know, we all are. It's a fine line sometimes for all of us. But your dad didn't want to leave his office. It had been a few days since he'd left his office.
How many days? She wondered. And was he eating? Was he going to the bathroom? Had he shoved his desk up against the door? Had he thrown a stack of ideas out the seventh-floor window? Had he stood in the hallway and shouted, "You're all limp-dicked sellouts, every one of you, and especially you, Kelly, you fucking brainless hack"? Did they have to carry him out? Was it during the day? Did everyone watch? "He's at St. Richard's?" she asked.
"Yep, they're just checking things out, helping him get some sleep. I think that's really going to help."
"I'm coming," she said. "Tell him I'm coming. Did he hurt himself?"
"No, Cather, he's not hurt. He's just sleeping. I think he's going to be fine. It's just been a rough couple of months."
Months. "I'm coming, okay?"
"Sure," Kelly said. "I'm probably going to head home soon, but this is my cell number. You call me if you need anything, okay?"
"Thank you."
"I mean it. Anything at all. You know how I feel about your dad. He's my lucky penny. I'd do anything for the guy."
"Thank you." She hung up before Kelly did. She couldn't stand anymore. Then she immediately called Wren. Wren sounded surprised when she answered the phone. Kath cut to the chase. "Dad's at St. Richard's." "What? Why?" "He lost it at work." "Is he okay?" "I don't know. Kelly said he wouldn't leave his office." Wren sighed. "Fucking Kelly?" "Yeah. Dad's going to be mortified." "I know," Kath said. "I'm going up there as soon as I can figure out a ride." "Did Kelly tell you to come?" "What do you mean?" "I mean, it's finals week, and you know that Dad is probably tranked into oblivion right now.
We should call tomorrow and see how he's doing. Ren, he's in the hospital. St. Richard's isn't exactly a hospital. You don't think we should go? I think we should finish our finals, Ren said. By the time we're done, he'll be just coming out of the haze and we can be there for him. I'm going, Kath said. I'm going to see if Grandma will come get me. Grandma's in Chicago. Oh, right. If you really have to do this, I know that Mom would drive you, if it's that important to you. No, are you kidding me? Fine, whatever. Will you call me when you get to the hospital? Kath wanted to say something mean, like, I'd hate to interrupt your studies during finals week. But instead, she said, yes. She called Reagan next. Reagan had a car. Reagan would understand. Reagan didn't answer. Kath crawled onto her bed and cried for a few minutes. For her dad, for his humiliation and his weakness, and for herself. Because she hadn't been there to keep this from happening, and because even something this shitty couldn't bring her and Ren together. Why was Ren being so cool about this? Just because it had happened before didn't mean it wasn't serious. It didn't mean he didn't need them. Then she cried over the fact that she hadn't made more friends with cars. And then she called Levi. He answered right away. Kath? Hey, Levi. How are you?
Fine. I'm just working.
Do you usually answer your phone at work?
No.
Oh. Well, later, when you get off, is there any chance you could drive me to Omaha? I know it's a big hassle, and I'll give you gas money. It's just sort of a family emergency.
I'll come get you now. Give me 15.
No, Levi, it can wait if you're at work.
Is it a family emergency?
Yeah, she said quietly.
See you in 15.
There was no way Snow would see him up here, up on the balcony. Snow was too busy trying to learn his steps for the ball, too busy stamping all over Agatha's silk boots. She looked lovely today. All golden white hair and creamy pink skin. That girl is opaque, Baz thought. Like milk. Like white glass. Simon took a bad step forward, and she lost her balance. He caught her with a strong arm around her waist. Don't they just shine together? Weren't they every shade of white and gold? He'll never give her up, you know. Baz wanted to whip around at the voice, but he caught himself. Didn't even turn his head. Hello, Penelope.
You're wasting your time, she said, and damned if she didn't sound tired. He thinks she's his destiny. He can't help himself.
I know, Baz said, turning into the shadows. Neither can I.
From Tyrannus Basselton. Son of Pitch. Posted December 2009 by fanfics.net authors Magicath and Renegade.
Chapter 19. Levi didn't ask any questions, and Kath didn't feel like explaining. She told him that her dad was in the hospital, but she didn't tell him why. She thanked him a lot. She pushed a $20 bill into his ashtray and told him she'd give him more as soon as she got cash. She tried not to look at him, because every time she did, she imagined him kissing someone, either her or that other girl, and both memories were equally painful. She waited for him to turn on the Levi, to needle her with questions and charming observations, but he left her alone. After about 15 minutes, he asked whether she'd mind if he listened to a lecture. He had a big final the next day. Go ahead, Kath said. Levi set a digital recorder on the dashboard. They listened to a deep-voiced professor talk about sustainable ranching practices for the next 40 minutes. When they got into town, Kath gave Levi directions. He'd only been to Omaha a few times. When they turned into the hospital parking lot, Kath was sure he'd read the sign,
St. Richard's Center for Mental and Behavioral Health. You can just drop me, she said. I really appreciate this. Levi turned off the range management lecture.
I'd feel a lot better if I saw you in.
Kath didn't argue. She walked in ahead of him and went straight to the registration desk. She was half conscious of Levi folding himself into a lobby chair behind her. The man at the desk wasn't any good.
Avery, he said. Avery Arthur.
He clicked his tongue.
Doesn't look like he's authorized for visitors.
Could Kath talk to a doctor? Or a nurse? The guy wasn't sure about that. Was her dad awake? He couldn't tell her. Federal privacy regulations and all. Well, I'm just going to sit over there, Kath said. So maybe you could tell somebody that I'm waiting, and that I'd like to see my dad. The guy, he was a big guy, more like a muscled-up orderly than a receptionist or a nurse, told her she was welcome to sit all she wanted. She wondered if this guy had been here when they'd brought her dad in. Did they have to restrain him? Was he screaming? Was he spitting? She wanted everyone here, starting with this guy, to know that her dad was a person, not just a crazy person. That he had people who cared about him and who would notice if he was roughed up or given the wrong medicine. Kath huffed down into a chair where the no-good orderly could see her. 10 minutes of silence passed before Levi said,
No luck?
Same old luck. She glanced over at him, but not at his face. Look, I'm probably here for the long haul. You should head back. Levi leaned forward on his knees, scrubbing at the back of his hair like he was thinking about it.
I'm not going to leave you alone in a hospital waiting room, he said finally.
But all I can do now is wait, she said. So this is the perfect place for me. He shrugged and sat back, still rubbing his neck.
I may as well see you through. You might need a ride later.
Okay, Kath said. Then forced herself to keep going. Thank you. This isn't going to be a regular thing, you know. I promise not to call you the next time one of my relatives gets drunk or goes crazy. Levi took off his green jacket and laid it on the seat next to him. He was wearing a black sweater and black jeans, and he was holding his digital recorder. He pushed it into his pocket.
I wonder if there's coffee around here, he said.
St. Richard's wasn't a regular hospital. Nothing but the waiting room was open to the public, and the waiting room was more like a hallway with chairs. There wasn't even a TV hanging in the corner, tuned to Fox News. Levi stood up and moseyed over to the orderly's window. He leaned forward on the counter and started to make conversation. Kath felt a surge of irritation and got out her phone to text Ren. At St. Richard's, waiting to see Dad. She thought about calling their grandma, but decided to wait until she had more information. When she looked up from the phone, Levi was being buzzed through the main doors. He glanced back at her just before they closed behind him and smiled. It had been so long since Levi smiled at her. Kath's heart leapt up into her sinuses. It made her eyes water. He was gone a long time. Maybe he was getting a tour, she thought. He'd probably come back with a pitcher of beer, lipstick all over his face, and Fiesta Bowl tickets. Kath didn't have anything to distract herself with except her phone, but the battery was low, so she shoved it into her bag and tried not to think about it. Eventually, she heard a buzz, and Levi walked back through the doors, holding 2 disposable coffee cups and balancing 2 boxed sandwiches on his forearms.
Turkey or ham? He asked.
Balancing 2 boxed sandwiches on his forearms.
Turkey or ham? He asked.
Why are you always feeding me?
Well, I work in food service, and my major is basically grazing.
Turkey, she said, feeling grateful, but still not feeling like she could look Levi in the eye.
She knew what that was like. His eyes were warm and baby blue. They made you feel like he liked you better than other people.
She took a coffee cup. How did you get back there?
I just asked about coffee, he said. Kath unwrapped the sandwich and started tearing off bite-sized pieces. She pinched them flat before pushing them into her mouth. Her mom used to tell her not to mutilate her food. Her dad never said anything. His table manners were much worse.
You can, you know, Levi said, unwrapping his sandwich.
Can what?
Call me the next time somebody goes crazy or gets arrested. I was glad you called me tonight. I thought you were mad at me.
Kath smashed another chunk of sandwich. Mustard oozed out the sides. Are you the guy who everybody calls when they need help?
Am I Superman?
She could hear him smiling. You know what I mean. Are you the guy all your friends call when they need help because they know you'll say yes?
I don't know, he said. I'm the guy everybody calls when they need help moving. I think it's the truck.
When I called you tonight, she said to her shoes, I knew that you'd give me a ride, if you could.
Good, he said. You were right.
I think I might be exploiting you, he laughed.
You can't exploit me against my will.
Kath took a sip of the coffee. It tasted nothing like a gingerbread latte.
Are you worried about your dad?
Levi asked. Yeah, she said. And no, I mean... She glanced over at him quickly. This isn't the first time. This just happens. Usually it doesn't get this bad. Usually we're there for him. Levi held his sandwich by one corner and took a bite from the other.
Are you too worried about your dad to talk about why you're mad at me?
His mouth was full. It's not important, she muttered.
It is to me.
He swallowed.
You leave the room every time I walk in.
Kath didn't say anything, so he kept talking.
Is it because of what happened?
She didn't know how to answer that question. She didn't want to. She looked up at the wall across from her, up where there'd be a TV if this place wasn't such a prison. She felt Levi lean toward her.
Because I'm sorry about that, he said. I didn't mean to make you feel uncomfortable.
Kath pinched the top of her nose, wishing she knew where her tear ducts were so she could hold them closed. You're sorry?
I'm sorry I upset you, he said. I think maybe I was reading you wrong, and I'm sorry about that.
Her brain tried to come up with something mean to say about Levi and reading. You didn't read me wrong, she said, shaking her head. Just for a second, she felt more angry than pathetic. I went to your party.
What party?
She turned her head to face him. Even though she'd started to cry and her glasses were fogging up and she hadn't officially brushed her hair since yesterday morning. The party, she said, at your house, that Thursday night. I came with Reagan.
Why didn't I see you?
You were in the kitchen, preoccupied. Levi's smile faded and he sat back slowly. Kath set her sandwich down on the chair next to her and clenched her hands in her lap.
Oh, Kath, Levi said. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. You both seemed pretty happy about it.
You didn't say you were coming.
She looked over. So if you'd known I was coming, you wouldn't have been making out with somebody else in the kitchen? For once, Levi didn't have anything to say. He set his sandwich down, too, and pushed both hands through his wispy blonde hair. His hair was made of finer stuff than Kath's. Silk, down, blown-out dandelion seeds.
Kath, he said, I'm so sorry.
She wasn't quite sure what he was apologizing for. He looked up at her from the top of his eyes, looking genuinely sorry. And sorry for her.
It was just a kiss, he said, pleading his forehead.
Which one? She asked. Levi pushed his hands to the back of his head and his bangs fell loose.
Both of them.
Kath took a deep, shaky breath and let it break out through her nose.
Right, she said. That is, good information to have.
I didn't think...
Levi.
She cut him off and looked him straight in the eye, trying to look stern despite her tears.
I can't thank you enough for bringing me here, but I couldn't mean this more. I'd like it if you left now. I don't just kiss people. Kisses aren't just with me. That's why I've been avoiding you. That's why I'd like to avoid you now. Okay?
Kath. The door buzzed, and a nurse stepped through it, wearing flowered scrubs. She smiled at Levi.
You guys want to come back now?
Kath stood up and grabbed her bag. She looked at Levi.
Please.
And then she followed the nurse. Levi was gone when Kath came back to the lobby. She took a cab to her dad's office to get his car. It was full of fast food wrappers and crumpled up ideas. When she got home, she did the dishes and texted Ren. Kath didn't feel like calling. She didn't feel like saying, "Hey, you were right. He's all drugged up and probably won't come out of it for a few days, and there's no real reason for you to come home, unless you just can't stand the idea of him going through this alone." But he won't be alone, because I'll be here. Her dad hadn't done laundry for a while. The steps to the basement were covered with dirty clothes, like he'd just been throwing stuff down there for a few weeks. She started a load of laundry. She threw out pizza boxes with desiccated slices of pizza. There was a poem painted on the bathroom mirror with toothpaste. Maybe it was just words. It was lovely, so Kath took a photo with her phone before she wiped it clean. Any one of these things would have tipped them off if they'd been at home. They looked out for him. They'd find him sitting in his car in the middle of the night, filling page after page with ideas that didn't quite make sense, and they'd lead him back inside. They'd see him skip dinner. They'd count the cups of coffee. They'd notice the zeal in his voice. And they'd try to rein him back in. Usually it worked, seeing that they were scared, terrified their dad. He'd go to bed and sleep for 15 hours. He'd make an appointment with his counselor. He'd try the meds again, even if they all knew it wouldn't stick. "I can't think when I'm on them," he'd told Kath one night. She was 16, and she'd come downstairs to check the front door and found it unlocked. And then she'd inadvertently locked him out. Her dad had been sitting outside on the steps, and it scared her half to death when he rang the doorbell. "They slow your brain down," he said, clutching an orange bottle of pills. "They iron out all the wrinkles. Maybe all the bad stuff happens in the wrinkles, but all the good stuff does too. They break your brain like a horse, so it takes all your orders. I need a brain that can break away, you know? I need to think. If I can't think, who am I?" It wasn't so bad when he got lots of sleep, when he ate the eggs they made him for breakfast, when he didn't work straight through 3 weekends in a row. A little manic was okay. A little manic made him happy and productive and charismatic. Clients would eat awesome straight out of his hands. She and Ren had gotten good at watching him, at noticing when a little manic slid into a lot, when charismatic gave way to crazed, when the twinkle in his eyes turned into a burnt-out flash. Kath stayed up until 3 o'clock that morning, cleaning up his messes. If she and Ren had been here, they would have seen this coming. They would have stopped it. The next day, Kath took her laptop to St. Richard's with her. She had 31 hours to write her short story. She could email it to Professor Piper. That would be okay. Ren finally texted her back. "Are you here? Psych final tomorrow, right?" They had the same psychology professor, but were in different classes. "I'll have to miss it," Kath typed. "Not acceptable," Ren replied. "Not leaving Dad alone," Kath texted back. "Email the professor. Maybe he'll let you make it up."
Okay. Email him, and I'll talk to him. Okay.
Kath couldn't bring herself to say thanks. Ren should be missing that final too. Her dad woke up around noon and ate mashed potatoes with yellow gravy. She could tell he was angry, angry that he was there and angry that he was too groggy for any of his anger to rise to the top. There was a TV in his room, and Kath found a Gilmore Girls rerun. Their dad always used to watch Gilmore Girls with them. He had a crush on Suki. Kath's computer kept falling asleep in her lap, so she finally set it down and leaned on his bed to watch TV.
"Where's Ren?"
he asked during a commercial break.
"School."
"Shouldn't you be there, too?"
"Christmas break starts tomorrow." He nodded. His eyes looked dull and distant. Every time he blinked, it seemed like maybe he wasn't going to manage to open them again. A nurse came in at 2 in the afternoon with more meds. Then came a doctor who asked Kath to wait in the hall. The doctor smiled at her when he left the room.
"We'll get there,"
he said in a cheerful, comforting voice. "We had to bring him down pretty fast." Kath sat next to her dad's bed and watched TV until visiting hours were over. There was no more cleaning to do, and Kath felt uneasy being in the house by herself. She tried sleeping on the couch, but it felt too close to the outside and too close to her dad's empty room, so she went up to her room and crawled into her own bed. When that didn't work, she climbed into Ren's bed, taking her laptop with her. Their dad had stayed at St. Richard's 3 times before. The first time was the summer after their mom left. They'd called their grandma when he wouldn't get out of bed, and for a while she'd moved in with them. She filled the freezer with frozen lasagna before she moved out. The second time was in 6th grade. He was standing over the sink laughing and telling them that they didn't have to go to school anymore. Life was an education, he said. He'd cut himself shaving, and there were tiny pieces of toilet paper stuck with blood to his chin. Kath and Ren had gone to stay with their Aunt Lynn in Chicago. The third time was in high school. They were 16, and their grandma came to stay, but not until the second night. That first night they'd spent in Ren's bed, Ren holding Kath's wrists, Kath crying.
"I'm like him," she'd whispered.
"You're not," Ren said.
"I am. I'm crazy like him."
She was already having panic attacks. She was already hiding at parties. In 7th grade, she'd been late to class for the first 2 weeks because she couldn't stand being in the halls with everyone else during passing periods.
"It's probably going to get worse in a few years. That's when it usually kicks in."
"You're not," Ren said.
"But what if I am?"
"Decide not to be."
"That's not how it works," Kath argued. "Nobody knows how it works." "What if I don't even see it coming?"
"I'll see it coming." Kath tried to stop crying, but she'd been crying so long the crying had taken over, making her breathe in harsh sniffs and jerks.
"If it tries to take you," Ren said, "I won't let go."
A few months later, Kath gave that line to Simon in a scene about Baz's bloodlust. Ren was still writing with Kath back then, and when she got to the line, she snorted. "I'm here for you if you go manic," Ren said, "but you're on your own if you become a vampire."
"What good are you anyway?" Kath said.
Their dad was home by then, and better, and Kath didn't feel, for the moment, like her DNA was a trap ready to snap closed on her.
"Apparently I'm good for something," Ren said. "You keep stealing all my best lines."
Kath thought about texting Ren Friday night before she fell asleep, but she couldn't think of anything to say.
The humdrum wasn't a man at all, or a monster. It was a boy. Simon stepped closer, perhaps foolishly, wanting to see its face.
He felt the humdrum's power whipping around him like dry air, like hot sand, an aching fatigue in the very marrow of Simon's bones. The humdrum, the boy, wore faded denims and a grotty T-shirt, and it probably took Simon far too long to recognize the child as himself, his years-ago self.
"Stop it!" Simon shouted. "Show yourself, you coward! Show yourself!"
The boy just laughed. From Chapter 23, Simon Snow and the Seventh Oak. Copyright 2010 by Gemma T. Leslie.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell. Chapter 20. Her dad and Ren came home on the same day, Saturday. Her dad was already talking about going back to work, even though his meds were still off, and he still seemed alternately drunk or half asleep. Kath wondered if he'd stay on them through the weekend. Maybe it would be okay if he went off his meds. She and Ren were both home now to watch out for him. With everything that had happened, Kath wasn't quite sure whether she and Ren were on speaking terms. She decided that they were. It made life easier. But they weren't on sharing terms. She still hadn't told Ren anything about Levi, or about Nick, for that matter. And she didn't want Ren to start talking about her adventures with their mom. Kath was sure Ren had some mother-daughter Christmas plans. At first, all Ren wanted to talk about was school. She felt good about her finals, did Kath? And she'd already bought her books for next semester. What classes was Kath taking? Did they have any together? Kath mostly listened. "Do you think we should call Grandma?" Ren asked. "About what?" "About Dad." "Let's wait and see how he does." All their friends from high school were home for Christmas. Ren kept trying to get Kath to go out. "You go," Kath would say. "I'll stay with Dad." "I can't go without you. That would be weird." It would seem weird to their high school friends to see Ren without Kath. Their college friends would think it was weird if they showed up anywhere together. "Somebody should stay with Dad," Kath said.
"Go, Kath," their dad said after a few days of this. "I'm not going to lose control sitting here watching Iron Chef."
Sometimes Kath went. Sometimes she stayed home and waited up for Ren. Sometimes Ren didn't come home at all. "I don't want you to see me shit-faced," Ren explained when she rolled in one morning. "You make me uncomfortable." "Oh, I make you uncomfortable?" Kath said. "That's priceless." Their dad went back to work after a week. The next week he started jogging before work, and that's how Kath knew he was off his meds. Exercise was his most effective self-medication. It's what he always did when he was trying to take control. She started coming downstairs every morning when she heard the coffee maker beeping, to check on him, to see him off. "It's way too cold to jog outside," she tried to argue one morning. Her dad handed her his coffee, decaf, while he laced up his shoes.
"It feels good. Come with me."
He could tell she was trying to look in his eyes, to take his mental temperature, so he took her chin and let her.
"I'm fine," he said gently. "Back on the horse, Kath."
"What's the horse?" she sighed, watching him pull on a South High hoodie. "Jogging? Working too much?"
"Living," he said, a little too loud. "Life is the horse."
Kath would make him breakfast while he ran, and after he ate and left for work, she'd fall back to sleep on the couch. After a few days of this, it already felt like a routine. Routines were good for her dad, but he needed help sticking to them. Kath would usually wake up again when Ren came downstairs or came home. This morning, Ren walked into the house and immediately headed into the kitchen. She came back into the living room with a cold cup of coffee, licking a fork. "Did you make omelets?"
Kath rubbed her eyes and nodded. We had leftovers from Los Portales, so I threw them in. She sat up. That's decaf. He's drinking decaf? That's good, right? Yeah. Make me an omelet, Kath. You know I suck at it. What will you give me? Kath asked. Wren laughed. It's what they used to say to each other. What will you give me? What do you want? Wren asked. Do you have any chapters you need baited? It was Kath's turn to say something clever, but she didn't know what to say, because she knew that Wren didn't mean it, about beta-ing her fic, and because it was pathetic how much Kath wished that she did. What if they spent the rest of Christmas break like that, crowded around a laptop, writing the beginning of the end of Carry On Simon together? Nah, Kath said finally. I've got a doctoral student in Rhode Island editing all my stuff. She's a machine. Kath stood up and headed for the kitchen. I'll make you an omelet. I think we've got some canned chili. Wren followed. She jumped up onto the counter next to the stove and watched Kath get the milk and eggs from the refrigerator. Kath could crack them one-handed. Eggs were her thing. Breakfasts, really. She'd learned to make omelets in junior high, watching YouTube videos. She could do poached eggs, too, and sunny side up. And scrambled, obviously. Wren was better at dinners. She'd gone through a phase in junior high when everything she made started with French onion soup mix. Meatloaf, beef stroganoff, onion burgers. All we need is soup mix, she'd announced. We can throw all these other spices away. You girls don't have to cook, their dad would say. But it was either cook or hope that he remembered to pick up Happy Meals on the way home from work. There was still a toy box upstairs packed with hundreds of plastic Happy Meal toys. Besides, if Kath made breakfast and Wren made dinner, that was at least two meals their dad wouldn't eat at a gas station. Quick Trip isn't a gas station, he'd say. It's an everything-you-really-need station, and their bathrooms are immaculate. Wren leaned over the pan and watched the eggs start to bubble. Kath pushed her back, away from the fire. This is the part I always mess up, Wren said. Either I burn it on the outside or it's still raw in the middle. You're too impatient, Kath said. No, I'm too hungry. Wren picked up the can opener and spun it around her finger. Do you think we should call Grandma? Well, tomorrow's Christmas Eve, Kath said, so we should probably call Grandma. You know what I mean. He seems like he's doing okay. Yeah. Wren cranked open the can of chili and handed it to Kath. But he's still fragile. Any little thing could throw him off. What'll happen when we go back to school? When you're not here to make breakfast? He needs somebody to look out for him. Kath watched the eggs. She was biding her time. We still have to go shopping for Christmas dinner. Do you want turkey? Or we could do lasagna, in Grandma's honor. Maybe lasagna tomorrow and turkey on Christmas? I won't be here tomorrow night. Wren cleared her throat. That's when Laura's family celebrates Christmas. Kath nodded and folded the omelet in half. You could come, you know, Wren said. Kath snorted. When she glanced up again, Wren looked upset. What? Kath said. I'm not arguing with you. I assumed you were doing something with her this week. Wren clenched her jaw so tight her cheeks pulsed. I can't believe you're making me do this alone. Kath held up the spatula between them. Making you? I'm not making you do anything. I can't believe you're even doing this when you know how much I hate it. Wren shoved off the counter, shaking her head. Oh, you hate everything. You hate change. If I didn't drag you along behind me, you'd never get anywhere. Well, you're not dragging me anywhere tomorrow, Kath said, turning away from the stove. Or anywhere from now on. You are hereby released of all responsibility, read dragging me along. Wren folded her arms and tilted her head, the sanctimonious one. That's not what I meant, Kath. I meant we should be doing this together. Why this? You're the one who keeps reminding me that we're two separate people, that we don't have to do all the same things all the time. So fine. You can go have a relationship with the parent who abandoned us, and I'll stay here and take care of the one who picked up the pieces. Jesus Christ! Ren threw her hands in the air, palms out. Could you stop being so melodramatic for just 5 minutes, please? No. Kath slashed the air with her spatula. This isn't melodrama. This is actual drama. She left us in the most dramatic way possible on September 11th. After September 11th. Details. She left us. She broke Dad's heart and maybe his brain, and she left us. Ren's voice dropped. She feels terrible about it, Kath. Good, Kath shouted. So do I. She took a step closer to her sister. I'm probably going to be crazy for the rest of my life, thanks to her. I'm going to keep making fucked up decisions and doing weird things that I don't even realize are weird. People are going to feel sorry for me, and I won't ever have any normal relationships, and it's always going to be because I didn't have a mother. Always. That's the ultimate kind of broken, the kind of damage you never recover from. I hope she feels terrible. I hope she never forgives herself. Don't say that. Ren's face was red, and there were tears in her eyes. I'm not broken. There weren't any tears in Kath's eyes. Cracks in your foundation, she shrugged. Fuck that. Do you think I absorbed all the impact? That when Mom left, it hit my side of the car? Fuck that, Ren. She left you too. But it didn't break me. Nothing can break me unless I let it. Do you think Dad let it? Do you think he chose to fall apart when she left? Yes! Ren was shouting now. And I think he keeps choosing. I think you both do. You'd rather be broken than move on. That did it. Now they were both crying, both shouting. Nobody wins until nobody wins, Kath thought. She turned back to the stove. The eggs were starting to smoke. Dad's sick, Ren, she said as calmly as she could manage. She scraped the omelet out of the pan and dropped it onto a plate. And your omelet's burnt. And I'd rather be broken than wasted. She set the plate on the counter. You can tell Laura to go fuck herself. Like to infinity and beyond. She doesn't get to move on with me, ever. Kath walked away before Ren could. She went upstairs and worked on Carry On. There was always a Simon Snow marathon on TV on Christmas Eve. Kath and Ren always watched it, and their dad always made microwave popcorn. They'd gone to Jacobo's the night before for popcorn and other Christmas supplies. If they don't have it at the supermercado, their dad had said happily, you don't really need it. That's how they ended up making lasagna with spaghetti noodles and buying tamales instead of a turkey. With the movies on, it was easy for Kath not to talk to Ren about anything important, but hard not to talk about the movies themselves. Baz's hair is sick, Ren said during Simon Snow and the Selkies 4. All the actors had longer hair in this movie. Baz's black hair was swept up into a slick pompadour that started at his knife-point widow's peak. I know, Kath said. Simon keeps trying to punch him just so he can touch it. Right? The last time Simon swung at Baz, I thought he was going to brush away an eyelash. Make a wish, Kath said in her best Simon voice. You handsome bastard. Their dad watched Simon Snow and the Fifth Blade with them, with a notebook on his lap. I've lived with you two for too long, he said, sketching a big bowl of gravioli. I went to see the new X-Men movie with Kelly, and I was convinced the whole time that Professor X and Magneto were in love. Well, obviously, Ren said. Sometimes I think you're obsessed with Baselton, Agatha said on screen, her eyes wide and concerned. He's up to something, Simon said. I know it.
That girl is worse than Liza Minnelli, their dad said.
An hour into the movie, just before Simon caught Baz rendezvousing with Agatha in the veiled forest, Ren got a text and got up from the couch. Kath decided to use the bathroom, just in case the doorbell was about to ring. Laura wouldn't do that, right? She wouldn't come to the door. Kath stood in the bathroom near the door and heard her dad telling Ren to have a good time. I'll tell Mom you said hi, Ren said to him.
That's probably not necessary, he said, cheerfully enough.
Go, Dad, Kath thought.